After. Rainy days have always been Hannah's favourite in the shop. It's not good for business. The regulars stay home and the tourists get taxis to the museums instead of browsing up and down Victoria Street and the lanes surrounding the castle. But the truth is that although Hannah likes the customers, they are not why she came to work at Tall Tales. She has always felt safest surrounded by books. The library back in Dodsworth, happily browsing the early readers while her mum graded papers in the reference section. Blackwell's in Oxford, a cornucopia of culture, everything from Aeschylus to X-Men comics. The Bodleian, an actual living temple to literature and learning. The quiet of the library at Pelham, with the low shaded lamps glowing off the dark wooden desks. Hannah has never understood people who get married at their college chapel. She has no religion. She feels no connection to that remote, austere place with its psalms and hymns and Latin lessons. She and Will got married at Edinburgh's Town Hall in a civil ceremony that lasted only a few minutes. But the library? Yes, if she could have married Will in the Pelham Library, that she could imagine, in the deep reverential quiet, surrounded by all that humankind has ever known about love. Every novel, every poem, every word. So when she came to Edinburgh all those years ago, running away from the unanswered letters from Pelham, filled with questions about her future that she couldn't answer, perhaps it was natural that she looked for bookshop posts. A professional librarian position was out of the question without a degree, so it was work at a publisher. Once Hannah had dreamed of being an editor, stacks of manuscripts on her desk and a wall of books she had edited in her living room. But the adverts all specified a BA at minimum. Some of them asked for a master's or specialist qualifications. Bookshops, though. Bookshops were not so prescriptive. Kathy didn't even mind about her lack of retail experience. As long as you love books, she'd said, it'll all work out. And it had. At first, she and Kathy had worked side by side, Kathy teaching her how to work the till, how to keep track of stock, who to help and who to leave alone. Now, 9 years on, Kathy is semi-retired, and it's Hannah as much as anyone who runs the shop, she and Robin between them. It's Hannah who speaks to the reps, checks the stock, decides how many of the new Paula Hawkins they will want, whether to put Haruki Murakami in the window, and when to ask Ian Rankin for an event. Robin is their children's specialist and takes care of the shop's Facebook page and Twitter feed. Today, it's been raining hard since 12, and they've had only one customer in that time, a young man who has been browsing in the back room of the shop for a while. Kathy doesn't like them to harass the customers with offers of assistance unless they look actually lost. Nothing worse than feeling jumped on, she always says. But customers who lurk out of sight in the back room are a bit of a red flag for shoplifting, particularly students with a rucksack. And it's the non-fiction section housing some of the most expensive books in the shop, academic reference volumes and the £50 Tash and Art books. If you were going to steal stuff, that's where you'd start.
He needs to shit or get off the pot, Robin whispers to Hannah when she comes back from the staff room to find him still there. And Hannah laughs.
I'll go and see what he wants. She coughs as she enters the non-fiction section, not wanting to be seen to sneak up on customers. The man straightens and turns around, and Hannah sees that he's not as young as she thought. From the other side of the shop, there was something about his sandy hair and flushed cheeks that made him look like a teenager with a school bag. But up close she can see he's quite a long way past that, and as he stands, she catches a pink flash of scalp through the thinning hair at the back of his head. He's probably in his mid-twenties, a little younger than her, not a student then, and probably not a shoplifter either. "Can I help with anything?" she asks.
Oh, hi,
he says.
"Yes, actually."
His voice is tentative and there's a slight lilt in his accent. Not Scottish, Welsh maybe.
"I'm looking for a biography of Ted Bundy."
Ted Bundy? Hannah feels her lips thin. She tries not to be judgmental about reading. "No such thing as a guilty pleasure," is Kathy's motto, and it's one Hannah largely subscribes to.
Geoffrey Archer to Geoffrey Chaucer. Outlander to The Outsider. They all keep the wheels of publishing turning and money coming into the tills. And if they give someone a happy few hours, that's good enough for her. But still, she doesn't really understand why anyone wants to buy true crime. Why would they voluntarily soak themselves in the misery of people like her?
I'm not sure, she says, trying to keep the tightness out of her voice.
"You're in the right place. It'll be in this section if we have one. If not, I could order one in for you."
They stand side by side with their heads tipped, looking down the stack of true crime biography, and at last Hannah shakes her head.
"No, sorry, it doesn't look like we do. Was it specifically Bundy you were after, or can I recommend something else? I'll Be Gone in the Dark is supposedly very good."
She taps the spine.
"I haven't actually read it, but my colleague Robin liked it a lot, and it had great reviews. It's about the hunt for the Golden State Killer. It's not exactly a biography, more about the investigative side of things, I think."
"Okay," he says, somewhat to her surprise. He pulls it out of the bookshelf, a hefty hardback retailing at north of £20.
"Thanks, I'll take it."
"Great. Was there anything else?" Hannah asks. She's turning away for the till, expecting him to say no, but something in his face catches her. He's looking oddly nervous, expectant.
"Actually, yes," he says.
His voice flutes up half an octave like a teenage boy's.
"Are you Hannah Jones?"
She stops in her tracks. Her whole body goes instantly stiff, and then her cheeks flame with heat. For a long moment she just stares at him, frozen, trying to figure out what to say. Should she lie? Walk away? Refuse to answer? It doesn't matter what she says. Her stricken silence is an answer in itself, and she can see from the man's face that he knows it. In spite of the subtle ways she's changed her appearance since the trial, the glasses she started wearing full-time instead of just for watching TV, the long hair she sacrificed to anonymity. The difference is enough to fool the casual observer, but this guy is clearly far from that. He's trying not to look pleased, but he is. He has hit the bullseye.
"Who are you?"
she manages at last, and her voice surprises her. It is a hiss of anger.
"Who are you?"
The young man's pink and white face falls a little and he looks slightly hurt.
"I'm a writer. My name's Geraint."
"Of course."
"I'm sorry," he's saying. "I emailed asking if it would be okay if I popped past to introduce myself. But I didn't hear back, so I thought..."
Fuck. Fuck. The man is still speaking. Something about an article, a podcast, an interview.
but the words make no sense above the ringing in her head. "I can't do this," she says, interrupting him. Her voice is still harsh and strange in her own ears. "Not here. You can't come here again, do you understand?" "I'm really sorry," he says, and now he looks it. His face is crestfallen. "I should have thought. It never occurred. Just go," she breaks in desperately, and he nods and sets the book gently back on the shelf. "I am really sorry," he repeats, with more emphasis this time, but she's walking away from him now, unable to look him in the face, unable to think of anything except getting away from him. "Ryan said..." It's that one word that breaks the spell. "Ryan." She stops, turns around. "You spoke to Ryan?"
"Yes, he's a good friend. It was Ryan who suggested coming to see you."
"How? How is he?"
He's all right. He's better than he was."
She swallows, unable to admit that she wouldn't know, because she hasn't seen him for more than 5 years. What kind of friend does that make her?
"I really am sorry," the man, Geraint, says again, miserably this time. "I really apologise for springing this on you like that. I should have realised this wasn't the right time and place."
"It's okay," she says, though it's not, and it never was, and she wants to kick herself for saying it. "Look, email me, okay? I'll reply, I promise, but you can't come here. This is my work. They don't know anything about that time."
"I understand," he says, dropping his voice to a whisper as though they are conspirators. "I'll email. Thanks, Hannah."
And then he's gone. After the shop door swings shut behind him, Hannah finds her legs are trembling, and she gropes her way to the story corner beanbag and sits, her face in her hands, trying to stop shaking. Why did she say that about the email? Now she will have to read it and reply. Why? Because it was the only way to get rid of him, she realises, or it felt like the only way. And because part of her at heart is still the nice, polite girl from Dodsworth who wants people to like her and who doesn't want to disappoint anyone or cross anyone or let anyone down. For a brief, flashing moment, she tries to imagine how April would have handled the young man. "Fuck you," probably in her most bored, drawling tone, and then laughed after he'd gone and poked fun at his prematurely balding hair. But then she pushes the thought out of her mind. She can't think about April. Not now. Least of all now. She is heaving herself to her feet when her phone starts vibrating. Her first thought is, "What now?" And her second is an instinct to silence it, send it to answer phone. She can't be dealing with her mother, not now. But when she looks at the screen, it's not Jill, it's not even Will. It's the hospital. She presses answer. "Hello?"
"Oh, yes, hello."
The woman on the other end sounds brisk and a little bit pissed off.
"Is that Hannah de Chast?"
She stumbles over the surname, as people always do.
"De Chastigan?"
"Yes." Hannah doesn't bother to correct the pronunciation. "Is everything okay?"
"Well, yes and no. It's Ellie here from the midwifery team. We had you down for an appointment at 2. Had you forgotten?"
For the second time that day, the blood drains from Hannah's face and then comes rushing back. "I'm so sorry," She stumbles over the words, even while she is heading to the staff room, picking her way through the teetering displays with all the haste she can safely muster.
I totally forgot. Something happened. Family stuff.
Oh, no. That word again. But it's too late to take it back.
I'm so sorry. Am I too late?
Well, you're lucky my next two ladies have arrived early, so I can put you back to 2:20, if you can get here in time. Where are you?
Just around the corner. I am so sorry.
Hannah has reached the staff room. She grabs her coat off the back of the door, shrugging her arms into it as she speaks.
I'll be there in 5 minutes, I promise.
As she hangs up, she sees Robin staring at her over the kettle. Everything all right?
Yes. No. I mean, I forgot my midwife appointment. I'm so sorry. Can you hold the fort?
Sure, Robin says cheerfully. But calm down. You'll do yourself a mischief.
You're a star, Hannah says breathlessly. And then she snatches up her bag and runs from the shop.
Before.
So, drink then?
Hannah said, coming into the living room where April was scrolling through her phone. Hannah had finished putting away the last of her belongings, and the set finally looked like home again.
Sure,
April said. She stretched, cat-like, spreading out all her toes and fingers.
Pelham-bar, I don't think I can be asked to go into town.
Sure, but can we go via Clodes? I met Ryan on the way over and he said to knock on if we were going for a drink.
She said the last part with a slight flush, knowing that she was giving herself an alibi for calling past Clodes that had nothing to do with Will, but knowing too that, of course, April would collect Will while they were over there, so it would come to the same thing. By picking up Ryan, she was ensuring Will's company.
No probs, April said.
She grabbed her phone, keys and purse, glanced at herself in the mirror and followed Hannah down the staircase and across the quad to Clodes. As they crossed the courtyard in front of the big, blocky, modern building, Hannah found herself glancing automatically up at Will's window, as she always did, second from the right, sandwiched between Hughes and Ryan's. It was dark, but next door Ryan's was bright and the window was open in spite of the cold air.
Bet they're smoking,
April said, with a slightly wicked look that made Hannah's stomach shift a little uneasily. She had come to know that look of April's, and it usually foretold some kind of mischief. The only question was how far she would go. When they reached Ryan's room, Hannah raised her hand to knock, but April put her finger to her lips. Her eyes were full of laughter.
Can you smell it?
She whispered. Hannah nodded. The smell of weed was filtering under the door, in spite of the dense municipal carpet, along with the sound of Bellowhead's New York Girls.
Don't say anything,
April whispered, and then she raised her hand and knocked, a sharp, peremptory rat-a-tat, quite unlike her usual single thump.
Who is it?
Ryan's voice came from inside. April winked at Hannah, and then, to Hannah's enormous surprise, she spoke, but in a voice quite unlike her own, plummy and rather prim.
Mr. Coates, this is Professor Armitage. We have received a complaint that the scent of the marijuana weed known as skunk has been detected emanating from your room. Could you please open the door?
Shit!
Hannah heard, very muffled from within, and the sound of people scrambling to their feet. The music was abruptly silenced. Then, still Ryan, but more loudly,
Just a minute, Professor. I'm just on the bog. Hang on a sec.
More flurried noises came from behind the door, the sound of the bathroom door opening, and then a toilet flushing.
"Open the window,"
she heard, whispered urgently from within, and then, in reply to some remark she couldn't hear,
"We'll open it wider, you dickhead!"
April, meanwhile, was creasing up with silent laughter. She recovered herself enough to say,
"Mr. Coates, Mr. Coates, I must ask you to kindly open this door immediately."
Though there was a suspicious wobble in her voice at the last word, as the toilet flushed again.
"One sec,"
came Ryan's voice, this time with a note of desperation. And then the door opened, and Ryan, face red and hair tousled, his clothes giving off a strong smell of weed, was standing in the doorway. For a second, he just looked at them both, puzzled, trying to make sense of the situation. But as April burst into an irrepressible guffaw, realization dawned, and his whole face flushed purple with barely suppressed rage.
"You little fucking bitch,"
he said, grabbing April's arm and dragging her inside the room. April was still howling with laughter, but she was also trying to pull herself out of Ryan's grip.
"Get off me, you bastard! That hurts!"
"It fucking should hurt!"
He shoved her, and she sprawled backwards into an armchair, looking up at him with a mixture of annoyance and defiance, rubbing her arm.
"I just flushed a perfectly good eighth down the bog because of you, you stupid little cow."
Hey, Ryan, calm down,"
Will said. He came across to stand between Ryan and April. He looked torn between relief and irritation.
"Come on, it was just a joke. April didn't know we'd flush it."
"Yeah, I had no idea you'd be that stupid," April retorted. "Why didn't you just drop it out the window like a normal person?"
"Because I thought I was about to get sent fucking down," Ryan said through gritted teeth.
He was standing over April as though he would have liked to hit her, and Hannah wasn't certain whether he would have done so if it hadn't been for Will.
"I dare say this is all very funny to posh birds like you, isn't it? But those of us without a rich daddy to pay people off have to live with the consequences of our actions. If I get expelled, that's it. Kaput. I am royally fucked. And you know what? I understand why you wouldn't get that, but you..."
He rounded on Hannah.
"I didn't think you were such a silly little bitch. Maybe living with her, it's rubbed off."
"Hey, leave her out of it,"
April said, standing up and facing Ryan.
"She had nothing to do with it, so pick on someone your own size."
"That'd be you, would it?"
Ryan said with a kind of snarling laugh. He gestured at the disparity between them. April, probably no more than 5'4" and 8 stone soaking wet. Ryan, over 6 foot and built like the rugby player he was.
"Well, you've got balls at least."
"Two more than you have," April retorted.
They stood for a moment, glaring at each other, a kind of palpable tension crackling in the air between them so strong that Hannah felt the hairs on the back of her neck stand up.
"Wanker.
Bitch."
"Hey, hey," said a voice from the corridor, and they both swung round to see Emily standing in the doorway, hands on hips.
"What's with the rampant misogyny, Coates?"
"Rampant misogyny, my arse," Ryan snapped. "She just made me flush an eighth of weed."
"Yeah, I made him," April said sarcastically, "with the power of my mind." Ooh.
She made wavy ghost fingers in front of Ryan's face, and he slapped her hand away irritably.
"I knocked on the door while he was having a spliff, and the idiot was so scared he flushed his entire stash."
"Nice move, Coates." Emily raised one eyebrow. With cool like that, maybe better not take up drug smuggling.
Both of you can go shove something painful where the sun don't shine.
Ryan growled.
And you?
He stabbed a finger at Will.
Don't stand there like you don't know she isn't a complete pain in the arse. That's the best part of 50 quid I'm down. And some of us actually have to work for our cash instead of milking the stock market for unearned money off the backs of the workers.
Ah, well, now we're getting down to it, mister. Capitalism is robbery, April said.
50 quid. Is that the real problem?
It's all the same with you socialist types, isn't it? Money is a construct and debt is a tool to subjugate the proletariat until someone owes you a tenner, at which point you never stop harping on about it. Look, here we go.
She pulled out her purse and began riffling through the notes.
20, 40, 60. Here you are, 50 quid for the stupid weed, plus a little extra for your trouble. Buy yourself something pretty, sweetheart.
She held out the cash. Ryan stood there glaring, a vein visibly pulsing in his temple and the muscles in his jaw working. His expression flickered between fury and something else, something Hannah couldn't quite pin down. Not humiliation, he didn't look humiliated. More like a strong desire to slap April's face. But then he seemed to make up his mind. He reached out and took the money with a little comedic bow and a mocking tug of his forelock.
"Why, thank you, m'lady. Your humble servant, I'm sure, and a pleasure to be rogered by you any day of the week."
Hannah let out a breath and exchanged a glance with Emily. It felt like a crisis had been averted, though she wasn't completely sure what or how. Would Ryan really have punched April in front of all of them, including Will? It didn't seem likely, but there had been something in the air between them. Something electric and powerful and very dangerous.
"I say,"
said another voice from behind her, this one mild and hesitant.
"What's been happening here? It smells like a bonfire."
Hannah turned to see Hugh standing in the doorway, blinking owlishly through his glasses. As she watched, he blew his fringe up out of his eyes and gave a rather fatuous grin.
"Been indulging in a spot of the old Mary Jane?" "Jesus Christ,"
Ryan muttered under his breath.
"Where the fuck have I ended up? Some kind of P.G. Woodhouse novel?"
"Hello, Hugh," April said. She stalked across the room to kiss Hugh on either cheek. "Thank you for the Christmas present."
Christmas present? Hannah was disconcerted somehow. She hadn't thought Hugh and April were close enough for that. She flicked a look at Will to see what he made of the odd remark, but he was picking up tobacco from where it had spilled across the desk and didn't seem to have heard. Hugh said something to April in return, his voice sounding a little uncomfortable, but too low for Hannah to make out, and April laughed. Not entirely kindly.
"Look, why did you come up here?"
Ryan said now.
"It wasn't just to make me flush my stash like a fucking dickhead, was it?"
"No," April said coolly. "Hannah and I are going to the bar. Are you coming?"
Hannah had expected Ryan to give April the brush off, but instead, somewhat to her surprise, he nodded.
"All right, I need a pint. And you?"
He pointed a finger at April.
50 quid or no 50 quid, you're buying. Got it?"
"Got it,"
April said. She linked arms with Ryan and gave him a little squeeze, and then said in her plummy fake professor voice,
"You love me, really, Mr. Coates, you know you do."
"I do fucking not,"
Ryan said. But the edge was gone from his voice, and when April dug him in the ribs, he tickled her back, making her laugh and squeal and writhe away, and then chased her all the way down the stairs and across the quad, the rest of them following in their wake.
Assault!
April shrieked as they rounded the corner of the library.
Bad touch!
Oh, my God, Will groaned as the two disappeared through the dark shapes of the rose garden. I swear she'll be the death of me. She'll kill me, Hannah. She really will.
But you love her, Hannah said lightly. Don't you?
Afterwards, she wondered if it was her imagination, the way Will paused and then looked away before answering, not meeting her eyes.
I do,
he said at last, and then gave a laugh.
Of course I do. You know what they say. Can't live with her. Can't live without her. Right?
Right, Hannah echoed. Hugh and Emily had outpaced them, and she and Will were alone in the winter-clipped rose garden, and the college was silent and empty, in the way only a sprawling building full of several hundred students and dons could sometimes inexplicably be.
Of course you do.
After.
It's closer to 15 minutes later that Hannah climbs the stairs, sweating profusely, to the waiting room at the midwifery clinic, clutching her maternity notes in one hand and her bag in the other. Her face is scarlet and her heart is hammering. How could she have forgotten the appointment? As she enters, a doorway on the far side of the waiting room opens and a woman's head pops out.
Are you Hannah de Chasting?
Yes, I'm so sorry.
She is trying not to pant too obviously.
It's fine, come on through.
Hannah follows her into the little office and sits on the hard plastic chair, shrugging off her coat for what she already knows is coming. She feels a bead of sweat run down the hollow of her spine and squirms against the chair back to stop the tickle.
Got your notes? The midwife asks.
Hannah nods and passes over the folder.
And your sample?
Oh, God. Hannah puts her hand to her forehead. I'm so sorry. In all the kerfuffle, I totally forgot.
It's okay, you can do one after. So, we are...
She looks at a calendar by her desk.
22 plus 4. Is that right? Okay, let's get you up on the couch and we'll measure the bump.
Nodding again, Hannah moves across to the couch and lies down, trying not to ruck up the giant roll of toilet paper stretched across the slippery cover. Her dress is stretchy jersey, and lying like this, she can see the still faintly surprising bulge of her stomach, smooth and round beneath the fabric. The midwife takes out a tape measure and measures from her ribs to her pubic bone. Then she slips a stethoscope up under Hannah's dress with a deft movement and listens for a moment before nodding and writing some figures down on Hannah's notes.
All good? You're measuring right on track for 22 weeks and baby's heartbeat is nice and strong too. Right, sit up.
She helps Hannah upright with a strong, pale arm and waits while Hannah swings her legs round and off the couch.
Let's do your blood pressure now.
She wraps the plastic cuff around Hannah's arm, chilly against Hannah's still hot skin, and pumps it up. She presses the stethoscope against Hannah's inner arm and deflates, counting. Then a little frown creases her brow.
Give that a minute and we'll have another go. Why don't you try for that sample while we're waiting? There's a loo in the hall.
She hands Hannah a clear vial and nods towards the door, and Hannah obediently slides off the couch and makes her way across the corridor, feeling a little disquieted. In the loo, she shuts her eyes, trying to drive out all thoughts of April and Ryan and Geraint. But she can't seem to banish them, and they crowd round her, intruding on her thoughts, pushing into this time that should be about her and her baby. At last, though, the sample pot is close enough to full, and she re-enters the little office and passes the vial across with the faint sense of embarrassment that never seems to leave the act of handing over a still-warm container of your own urine, no matter how many times she does it. The midwife dips a stick into the pot, reads something off, and nods.
Very good. Nothing to worry about there. Now, let's do that BP again, and then we're all done.
Hannah sticks out her arm, and the midwife slides on the cuff and inflates it again, this time much tighter, or maybe it's just that it's for the second time, Hannah's not sure. All she knows is that it's no longer just faintly uncomfortable, but actually verging on painful. There is silence. Hannah can feel the blood rushing in her arm, trying to get past the constriction, and hear the midwife breathing heavily through her mouth. It sounds like she has a cold and her nose is blocked. Then the woman straightens and undoes the cuff.
Okay, well, it's probably nothing to worry about, but it is still quite high.
I did run here, Hannah points out, rolling her sleeve back down. She says nothing about the shock she had with Geraint before the midwife called, but she's uncomfortably aware that it probably didn't help.
Let's get you back next week for a check, and I'm sure it'll all be back to normal.
Next week? Hannah is dismayed. The normal routine is monthly. The fact that this is considered worrying enough to upgrade her to a weekly visit has unsettled her. Are you sure?
So that takes us to the 21st. I can't do 2 o'clock, the midwife is saying, running her finger down her appointment book. In fact, the afternoon is completely blocked out. But I could see you at 9:40 a.m. Does that work?
Hannah sighs. She nods and takes out her phone to input the appointment.
Sure, but I'm certain it was just because I was running late. I'm sure you're right, but better safe than sorry, eh? Now, go home and relax.
Hannah nods, but as she leaves, the thought of Geraint's email pops into her head like an unwanted intruder, and she finds herself thinking wistfully, if only it was that simple. Before. I can't do it. Hannah stood in the centre of the set living room, twisting her fingers together, nausea and dread mingling in the pit of her stomach. I can't. I can't go down there and find out in front of everyone.
Fine, I'll go.
April stood up and stretched luxuriantly.
I'll text you. Castanets for a first, thumbs up for a second, or skull and crossbones for a third.
Dickhead, Hannah said, but she couldn't help laughing. Somehow, April's attitude was exactly what she needed. A reminder not to take this too seriously. It wasn't the end of the world, even if it felt like it. What made it worse was the unfairness of it all. April hadn't even done collections. It turned out her professor didn't believe in setting them in the first year. Will and Ryan had just done some kind of extended essay and got the marks back the same week. Hugh, on the other hand, had gone off white and trembling in his academic gown to sit a proper exam paper, and had been checking his pigeonhole every morning to see if the results had come through yet. Hannah wasn't sure how she had been expecting.